Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. This is the most important thing you can listen to today.
On today's episode of Capital Hacking,
Jake's sitting on the lawn one day and he's cutting the grass and he sees the wheelbarrow and he's like, oh, three-legged stool, buy right, manage right, finance right. He's like, the two back legs, one's the buy right, the other one's the finance right. They're fixed. Once you do them, they're done. The manage right is the wheel of the wheelbarrow. That's in constant motion. If you don't do one of those three, your wheelbarrow is going to tip. You need to have those three to execute a successful multifamily deal. You need to execute on all three.
Story out of nowhere.
Did you know that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself?
Capital Hacking begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to Capital Hacking. Holy man, I think we're almost at 180 shows or so today. Don't you, by the way, those of you who are listening, you're treadmilling, you're Ubering or you're Teslaing. I'm not as good as Brandon Turner and keeping track of every single episode number. But I will tell you, today's the day you've been waiting for, right? We've all been talking about this for weeks and weeks and months that we enter an audio mastermind when we join Capital Hacking, because capital of the human variety will lead to financial freedom and cash capital. But you've got to start with the human capital. And boy, do we have a human capital expert on the phone today, actually Zoom. And I cannot wait to introduce you to Gino Barbarino. But Gino Barbarino is famous because he's a huge podcaster, by the way, big contributor on Bigger Pockets, owns Multifamily Zone podcast, Wheelbarrow Profits podcast. Profits podcast. Hello, I'm losing my air, Gino. You got so many brands. The Rand family of company. You're a mentor, you're a teacher, you're passionate about your family, and you are exactly who we want to have on Capital Hacking. Welcome to the big show, Gino.
Josh, I got to correct you. One thing, Gino Barbaro and expert should not be in the same sentence, because never become experts in anything. Listen, how many kids you got? You got 10, I got 6.
I got 10 kids.
So between the two of us, we could field almost a football team and a half, right? So it's, you know how life is. Life is all about a learning process. When you think you're the expert, all of a sudden that box, it just
That's
becomes
a great
really,
point.
You don't think outside the box. So for me, I created the Jake and Gino brand for that education. And it's pretty self-serving because it's learn, do, and teach. And when you get on podcasts like you, Josh, I was talking about hospitality before we got on. The ability to be able to talk to somebody about a niche that I never even thought of. And the deposits you're talking about with the weddings, I'm like, how do they do? Well, now I learned something new today. So listen, everybody out there, don't ever think of yourself as an expert, because you're always about learning, about growing, right?
Well, that is, see, okay, forgive us. There's like an ethereal way to understand that. That is the expert understanding, is that constant human development is vital. And that's where we begin this show today. So let's begin at the beginning, Gino. How did you get to the point where today you're really a very successful multifamily investor, very successful in numerous businesses, but where did it all begin and who are you? What is your family life like?
Slowly it began. I was blessed. I had two amazing parents. I'm going to give you the 30-second version. They're both immigrants. And I was blessed. And I'll just say my dad was awesome. I started working with him since I was 8 years old. You know, I loved working with him. I loved the hard work ethic that he instilled in me. We opened the restaurant and worked at that restaurant for over 20 years. I loved the business until I didn't love the business. So my dad passed away in 2007. It left a hole. It left a void. And I didn't love the business anymore. And going into the recession, the Great Recession, things are changing. I looked and I said, I want to do something else. I need something more stable. And I dabbled in real estate, but you know, you buy a mobile home park, you buy a strip mall, you don't really know it, but you do it because everyone else is doing it. Person with money meets the person with experience. The person with the experience gets the money, and the person with the money gets the experience. I don't know if you've ever heard of that before, but that was me, right? I had that extra money, throwing it into deals, didn't know what I was doing. And I got serious about my education. I went and did a couple of mentorships. I was lucky that I met my partner, another gift from God, to be honest with you. Family, wife, and Jake. I think those are three things in my life that if I didn't have, I'd be a completely different person.
Man, and Jake, we love you already, Jake. I got to meet this guy. Sorry, Gino. Sorry to interrupt you.
He's awesome. Listen, he's the kind of partner you want because he's never complaining. He's never saying he's too busy. He's got his week planned out. He's a make it happen person. And when I met him, he was green. He's a W-2 employee. Basically, like I was self-employed, but I had a small business. I had that mindset, right? We get together in 2011. We say, let's buy deals. He moves from New York to Knoxville, smart guy, because he's like, I'm out of here in New York. He left 6 years before I did. And we start buying deals in Knoxville. And at the time, everyone's like, oh, you guys are lucky. So many deals out there. Yeah, but GDP was 1%. Rents were $350. I mean, Obama was president and just the economy was terrible. The consumer sentiment was terrible. There was you weren't raising capital back then, that's for sure, because it just wasn't out there, not like it is now. So you either have deals and no money, or money and no deals. There's really a short weird window where you have both. For us, we were just fortunate that we started buying our own deals and we were starting to refinance our deals and buying new deals. So for us, the first 1,000 units that we owned was all refi and roll. We were able to refinance over $11 million and continue to invest. For me, it's not the Lambo. I love the fact that I can stroke a check and buy a Lambo, but I don't even want one. Putting in the money, putting back into the next deal, and finally the snowball. And we call it the conveyor belt because it does take a couple of years for you to get liftoff, right? We're discussing whole life policies. You need time for your businesses to start matriculate. Don't think you're going to get wealthy overnight. It's not going to happen. I mean, you go to college for 4 years, you get a piece of paper, and then you start from scratch again. So if you're willing to get into the real estate, give yourself a good 24 months to really learn the business, create those relationships, understand why you're doing it, have clarity on it, and then take action.
I'm going to tell you, yeah, you threw out a couple of really nice little paradigms. One is refi and roll. I thought that was fun. You know, other people in bigger pockets, they think of it as the BRRR, B-R-R-R-R. I like the refi and roll is pretty fun too. And this conveyor belt, but you also talk about liftoff. So it's like somehow like the conveyor belt is getting you up to critical mass. I thought about that. And then I love the paradigm of 24 months. And your thought is get active and then count 24 months from then, and you're really going to start to feel strong in this position. Is that kind of
Think about it. When you first start out, you know, your results are a lagging indicator of your success because what happens, you start putting all that work in. For me, it took Jake and I 18 months to find that first deal. I didn't have Jake and Gino. I didn't have an education platform. And it's not just about education. It's really about a community because multifamily is a team sport. Ironically enough, multifamily and building a business is like building a family. Very, very similar, right? So when we first started out, it took us 18 months to find that first deal. Then after we found it, 3 months later, we got our second deal. And then 6 months after that, we had our third deal. So within buying our first deal, we had over 200 units, right? That's what ends up happening. You end up scaling up quickly once you figure it out. It's just like everything else in life, but it does take time. The problem is that a lot of us have what we call get there-itis. You want to get there. You want to get there quick and get there quick. And when it doesn't work, well, I'm going to go into hospitality. Well, hospitality is not good. I'm going to go into single family. Well, that's not good. I'm going to go into crypto. Trust me, pick a niche. I'm telling you, I love multifamily. Josh is going to battle me. He loves hospitality. We're both right because we both figured out something that we really enjoy to do. We really love the models because they're both really business-based. What Josh
they
is talking about. Yeah,
right.
And what you've talked about, I'll throw up my book here, The Honeybee. What Josh is doing as far as what we're doing is we're multifaceting it. We have a core business. Let's say a 25-unit property. From that entity, we've been able to have a property management company. We've created an education company. We've created a syndication company. We're raising capital. Now we have the 100-year real estate investor brand attached to that as well, where we're selling whole life policies. We want to get into that business because I utilize those policies to borrow from them and to reinvest. We call it the dual asset strategy. You're creating one asset, buying one asset, and you're creating two, right? So think about that. You're doing the same thing. You're vertically integrated like we are. You have that core asset. All of a sudden, you have the property management. You have the hospitality, the selling of the weddings. You have the real estate. You have your education platform. So everybody can do it out there, but you need to start. That's the thing. You need to become a quote unquote expert at it. And like I said, once you start one business, it's like, wow, I can do this in any genre, right? You can take it into any business as long as you start understanding systems and scaling processes.
Yep. Get the rightest, Mr. And dual asset. I think we will carve out a few minutes before the end of the show to go into your dual asset strategy because I don't want to lose that. Though this show is a big fan of that. So we're going to teach that to people one more time and let you help us. But before we get there, let's run down the brands that you just described. So I loved it. You said, and I'm looking at your timeline online on jakeandgino.com. It is a killer timeline starting in 2011, and you really chronicle it well, which is good. It helps me understand who I'm talking to and who I'm investing with. But let's talk about your education company. So you said I created an education platform, then I created a property management company, then we created a syndication company. I feel like you have a few more companies than that, but let's start with the education. What do you call the education company? The Rand family of companies?
No, the education company is Jake and Gino.
That's Jake and Gino. Okay, got
it. So let me backtrack. I was showing you this book here, the Family Food and Fryers book. This is where the education came from, everybody. You're not going to start something and you're going to say to yourself, I'm an instant success. I put so much time and effort into that multifaceted when I was at the restaurant because I wanted to create multiple streams while I was at the restaurant. I saw the future back in 08. I wasn't smart. I just saw Grubhub. So I'm like, how is a 75-unit little restaurant going to compete with the Pizza Huts of the world? I need to create my own brand. So I created what we call Gino's Family. I was doing YouTube videos, teaching people how to make penne vodka, writing a cookbook. We were doing caterings. We were doing off-market stuff where we're going to people's homes and doing barbecues. We had physical products. I was selling cutlery. I was selling cooking videos. And that's where it came from. But what happened was the real estate just took over. And I said, that's my passion. I got into life coaching and business coaching. And I saw that as an area for me to grow. So that's where the education from Jake and Gino came along and all those ideas. And I said, you know what? Let's translate this. Let's start through the multifamily. Let's see how that works. And once I really understood it, Jake said, let's start a podcast. So that was the very first show, was the Wheelbarrow Profits podcast. It's probably over 6 years ago. From there, we ended up writing a book, which really helped out a lot. Because when you write books, you start doing research, you start learning, you really start diving into the material. And the great thing about it, like I said to you before, you start listening to other people who are in the space and you start learning from them as well. So the education was Jake and Gino. Then the property management company, we started out as soon as we bought our first property. Jake wanted to leave his W-2. So he figured, you know what? Property management fees, 10%. Hey, I'm making $2,000 a month by the time 6 months in, I can almost leave my job. But that property management was vital for us because we decided we wanted to be vertically integrated. We didn't want 17,000 units. We'd rather have 1,500 or 2,000 units that pay us really well, that we can control, and that we can actually build other businesses around the multifamily business. That's what was our decision was. For everybody out there, check what you want to do. There's no right or wrong. There's no right or wrong call. You can get third-party property management and decide to scale up and go for these really large deals. Unfortunately, right now, where we're finding values in the 50, 60, 80 unit area, and that's what we're buying. We just closed in an 80 unit deal 2 months ago. We've got a 50 unit deal in the contract now, and we're looking at 40 units, but they're really amazing deals. We're gonna buy them. We're gonna refile the capital out in the next 18 months, and we're gonna own those assets free and clear, basically, with all the money pulled out and just replicate it. Unfortunately, like I said, at this part of the cycle, these bigger deals, there's so much competition and they're so competitively priced. The cap rates are so compressed on them that we're not just out there trying to buy deals and just try to make a small return. We're underwriting differently than the private equity shops or the family offices. They've got different ideas. They just need to place capital and get whatever, 3 or 4%, 5% return. We don't want to do that yet. We're not there yet. So
well said. You've actually given a lot. No, from where I sit, I'd like to dive into all of those points. So what I'm going to do is try to put my hat on, which is called the listener's hat, the incredible Capital Hacking listener group that's just voracious learners, bro. So let's do a couple, since you gave us a tidbit there about your industry, which is multifamily, and you are really doing you brought up a nuance there where you're contrarian right now. Most people are saying it's got to be 100 units, seek the 250 unit. Of course, you agree with that strategy, except for when they're not affordable.
And you're saying they're not
affordable right now.
For us, they're not. I mean, some cap rates, you're looking at 3 and 3.5 caps, and you're looking in certain markets. This is very market dependent. If you're in a market that rents are not growing, you better be careful. And we're underwriting, and there's certain markets that are starting to turn. We're fortunate. We're in Tennessee, Florida, parts of Kentucky where you do have rent growth. We want the scale, but these small units work for us for one reason, Josh, and it's because we can couple them with our other portfolio. Exactly. So if we have 100 unit here and a 50, all of a sudden that office becomes 150. Exactly. So we can. That's why we're doing that.
I call that, yeah, you call it critical mass too, I'm sure, but we're something. Yeah. We call it gravity as well. Mm-hmm. Which we'll put a few near each other and we can create gravity for talent and teams. Let's go back to this definition, since you're an educator. Why don't you tell our listeners what you meant by 3 cap? Just go back to the basics. What does a 3 cap even mean so that we don't leave any listeners behind?
It's funny. The cap rate is like the most controversial thing you could even talk about. We're both Catholic, right? So certain things, the tenets of the Catholic faith, they're so controversial. So I'll bring the cap rate. The cap rate is NOI divided by the purchase price. That's what it is. So if your net operating income is $100,000 and your purchase price is $1 million, it's $100,000 divided by a million. It's a 10 cap. That means technically you're getting a 10% rate of return on your money. It would take you 10 years to get that money back. Now there's more other nuances in there. There's no debt involved. You're trying to compare apples to apples, right? And there's no such thing as a good cap or a bad cap, right? You're looking at different markets. For instance, in Nashville, cap rates are going to be lower in Nashville, thus prices are going to be higher. There's an inverse relationship. And the reason that is, when cap rates are lower, technically there's less risk. In Nashville, there's less risk in that market because of job growth, because of population growth, because you're probably going to collect rent a lot better there than you are if you're in a market like Cleveland. I'm not hating on Cleveland, but the Rust Belt, they're losing population. The weather's terrible. Job growth is not as good as Nashville. So cap rates are technically going to be higher in that market. So people look at Cleveland, go, oh, 9 caps there, Nashville 5 caps. I'm buying in Cleveland because of that. Don't use just the cap rate. Please use the cash on cash return, use cap rates, use your debt coverage ratio. You need to create your buy criteria. We call it the buy right, the manage right, and the finance right for one reason alone. You need to look at all three of those. So when you're looking at buying a deal, don't look just at the cap rate. That's one metric. There's so many other metrics you need to look at. Look at the age, look at the vintage of the property, look at the property class. There's so many things you need to look at to really dive into it. But that's basically what the definition of a cap rate is. You're trying to get some type of return on a property. And you know, a lower cap, you know, another tidbit, if you're a value investor and you're buying a lower cap, when you're buying that lower cap, you're adding value onto it. You're getting a better bang for your buck because you're adding $1 of NOI at a 5 cap. You're doubling it if you add that $1 to 10 cap, right? Because you're actually doubling. You're getting twice as much value by adding at that lower cap rate.
Boy, you are a great educator. And just in case this is all brand new to you, what he said there was, okay, so a 10 cap, he said, was that means you took $100,000, you put $1 million in, that's 10% return on your money, if you think of it that way. However,
yes,
if that market is able to sell at something called a 5 cap, meaning that sounds worse, right?
You
and I are listening, driving around. It's actually better, depending on what side of the equation you are. It means the building's worth more or you have to pay more. So a 5 cap means that that same $100,000 of profit, it means the building's going to sell at $2 million. So you're the buyer. You're like, dang, I got to pay twice as much. You're the seller. You're like, this is going well. And then Gino, you threw in there, but what if you're the owner of a 5 cap and you add $100,000 of new profits? And we can talk about how you guys do that. How do you guys create new profits? You're saying that it'll basically compound your wealth pretty quickly because of that.
It'll double. That's right. Exactly.
But so how do you do that though? How do you guys add value? Like, let's say $100,000 to profit.
Well, the quickest thing, everyone says raise rents, but I think in this type of the market cycle, this part, I want everyone to write this down because it's important. We call it valuation through operation. Not renovation, not just renovation. Like, you can look at a property and how is it operationally working? How is it functioning? What are the expenses per unit? Is there waste? You look at utilities. Are they $1,000 a door when they should be $600 a door? How are the management fees, right? How are all the contract services? How are the repairs and maintenance? All that stuff. You look at a property operationally and you can see the inefficiencies in it. We know that in Knoxville, it's about $5,000 a door to run a property. If we're seeing it's $5,500 or $6,000 a door, we know we can cut that right off the top. $1 saved in expenses goes to $1 right in your pocket. Now, I'm not telling you to really streamline and cut everything, but I'm talking, you know, we would say the fat. I mean, in multifamily, when you're trying to raise income, it really is when you're looking at rents. Rents are the number one thing. The other thing that I see a lot in the market is these mom and pop owners that aren't not billing back for utilities. You've got water and you've got sewer, you've got garbage. Most of these mom and pop, I wouldn't say most, but a lot of we bought from, they don't. They actually are paying it. We call all bills owned, which is the landlords are actually paying them. You can bill those back to the residents, and you should, especially if you're allowed in that market. And a lot of the markets you're allowed to. Just at mom and pops, we call it the death spiral. Your rent's $500. I don't want anything more. Don't call me. If something breaks, I don't care. Don't want to know. And people out there going, really? And you look at these T12s and you see these rents with these residents in there for the last 6 years where they haven't raised rents for 6 years. You're like, wow, there's the value add right there. So there's you can look at that. Adding additional units. We bought a 48-unit property, added two additional units to that property. That really, really, you know, tremendously.
Did you do it within the building or did you have to add on to the building?
What happened was it was a 48-unit property. We had an office. We turned the office into a two-bedroom and a studio. I mean, that's an additional $1,800 a month. It's 20 grand a year. You know, do it at a 10 cap. You're talking 200 grand. Do it at a 5 cap. It's $400,000 in value. So this is like a 6.5 cap property. So the other thing we do, Josh, real quick, we do non-refundable move-in fees. We don't do security deposits. We don't want security deposits. We don't want that friction. We started this 4 or 5 years ago. Everyone's like, can't do it. No one does it. We started doing it. Lower barrier to entry. So instead of, let's say, your traditional $700 rent deposit, we'll charge a $499 non-refundable move-in fee. It hits the income statement day one. We use a surety bond. So we have that, you know, that surety bond on there that if something happens, we collect that insurance. And then obviously if there's a judgment or something against them, they'll go after them for any damages, but it works really well because from day one, it's hitting your income statement, lower barrier to entry for the resident. They like it. They think in the back of their minds, I'm not getting my security deposit back anyway. So this is a better model. And let's say you had, you know, hit a rough patch of a month or two, not being able to rent the unit, just drop it, make a $199 move-in fee. And there you go.
How do you ensure that they leave the building good then?
Well, you don't ensure. What happens, we work with a company called Surety Bond and Assurant. They put a surety bond on. The resident buys the surety bond for like $80. It's a $500 bond. And if you don't like their credit score, you make them buy more bonds. So you're insured for that. And it's an amazing tool for you to use.
I love these types of innovations. Gina, that move-in fee, did you create that or did you just kind of aggregate a couple great ideas? Because it is awesome. I want to compliment that.
No, well, you know what it was? I wish you could take the credit, but it's one of those things where you buy from a mom and pop who's doing it. We bought the deal from him. It's a great strategy. So we started doing it 4 years ago. And listen, when you have 1,000 units and you're bringing in X amount in non-refundable move-in fees, it goes into the bank and it's your income. And then, you know, when you have move-out fees, you're always going to have little paint jobs or whatever. That's not a big deal, but that money's hitting day one. Just watch and see what other operators are doing out there. You'll be amazed at what you can learn from other people out there.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallum. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Hey, it's Hal Elrod, author of The Miracle Morning, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. Enjoy.
Well, before I let you get into all these other cool stuff, but by the way, if you're listening to this, I'm sure this is going to be one of those episodes where instead of going 1.5 speed, you're going like backwards all the time saying, what did he just say? So, Gino, let's go back to your vertical integration one more time, because we got through education. We got through the fact that you were hardwired even back in the restaurant days in New York City of wanting multiple streams of income. Mm-hmm. Really compliments to the chef there. You came up with books and videos, and then you came up with selling cutlery. Love, love, love that. Then he did offsite catering. I don't even want to get into all that. Those are awesome ideas. Let's get through to the syndication company. What is the name of your syndication company?
It's called Rand Partners. And that came about because Jake and I had about 1,000 units. We have the education company. And what's the best way to learn something? Well, you podcast the top 15 or 20 syndicators. And then you say to yourself, maybe we should do one. So we did a syndication about 3 years ago, our first one. We were fortunate because we had the platform. We had our multifamily mastery events. So we already had a sizable list. We were able to do our first raise, you know, within 48 hours, but it was a great instructive process. Then we bought our second deal about 8 months after that. And we bought our third deal syndicated about 4 months after that. So it was a process to start. We've got, you know, a really pretty large database of investors on there. And it was just aggregating from podcasts, opt-ins, from coming to the live events, from writing the books, and continue to nurture that. For us, it's one of those things where we love the equity. And these small deals, we don't need to raise capital. But when there is a $20 or $25 million opportunity, we'd love to be able to share with our team members as well as our investors. It gives you the ability to reach up, to look at deals that you would not, you'd normally look at.
Yeah, no, I like the way you envision it too. That's different than some other syndicators. I like the way you see it. You say, we're primarily doing this as education. We're primarily doing this for our own equity. But then we don't want to be able to limit, we don't want to limit our growth. So we're going to have this as a part of our tool belt. Really cool. And I love how you did it very organically. That is, therein lies the definition of the best way to build a, let's say, a scalable syndication company the way you're doing it. Let's go through, so you have RAND Partners. What about your coaching and mentorship programs? What is that called?
All under the Jenkins. You know, we call it Wheelbarrow Profits. That was the podcast that started. And the reason why it's called Wheelbarrow Profits, I'll throw the book up so you get a visual of it.
I love the freaking name. It's great.
I mean, the reason why, Jake's sitting on the lawn one day and he's cutting the grass and he sees the wheelbarrow and he's like, oh, three-legged stool, buy right, manage right, finance right. He's like, the two back legs, one's the buy right, the other one's the finance rate. They're fixed. Once you do them, they're done. The manage rate is the wheel of the wheelbarrow. That's in constant motion.
That's a great metaphor. Great.
So if you don't do one of those three, your wheelbarrow is going to tip. You need to have those three to execute a successful multifamily deal. You need to execute on all three, because if you buy it wrong, well, then you're in trouble. You buy an old asset with a lot of cast iron plumbing. You have the CapEx tsunami. All of a sudden, your numbers are gone. If you don't finance it properly, you got yield maintenance and you're something goes on, you have to refi or sell. Well, not the right debt, right? And if the wheel, you're not managing it properly, you're not properly managing third party, that's going to be a big issue for the operations of the company. That's how you're going to increase your NOI. So you really need to focus on all three of those legs.
Yeah. I just want to throw this out there that I'm a little bit similar to you. I've come up with this very manly idea called the golden carousel. Yeah, I'm showing Gino this hilarious little thing I bought in the mail. It's a golden carousel because it's the idea that you have alluded to in all your stuff is that when you start to invest privately, you create this momentum. Mm-hmm. And each little horse on the carousel can actually support the other. Yes. So maybe now you're buying a wealth building growth asset. Maybe you also fit a fix and flip in there. Maybe you buy things that lower your passive tax liability through depreciation. And if you just do it intentionally, that yes. little golden carousel can go on and on and on and lower mm-hmm. your tax liability every year, which I'm sure is paramount to some of the strategies you're using, is to use the tax code correctly and to keep the deals moving. You know, we'll get into that another time. But I love all the metaphors, man. What was that one? A capital expenditure tsunami.
The CapEx tsunami. Cast iron. Yes. CapEx. Yes. Okay. Well, that's one of our coaches. That's the thing. We have a coaching system and our coaches are great. They come up with these things. I mean, come on, think about so the CapEx true. Tsunami. And it's true because you're buying three caps and four caps that are C properties. They look great. Oh, I can raise the rents. But hey, do you have that money budgeted for all that exactly. stuff that's going to happen?
Yeah. And, but yeah, there's so much great stuff there. So where I heard you say, but by the way, I want to compliment the fact that you have the Multifamily Zone podcast. Now tell us a little more about this, because your lovely wife is part of this. Yes. And I get is there like a double meaning here, because you have a great family and that you're investing in multifamily? What's the genesis and the story behind that podcast then?
It's more of a brand builder. It's more of a brand solidifier. Maybe that might be the better term. A lot, I would say the vast majority of the people who gravitate towards our brand, they're families, or they want to start families, or they have long-term values, or they have that long-term mindset. And for my wife and myself, we wrote the book together. She's been an integral part of my life, and I wanted to include the entire family into the real estate business. So I remember asking her one time to be on, petrified. So I forced her to be on, and she jumped on, and she loved it. And I said, we really need to focus. You'll do the family side. I'll do the business side, because it has to be both. Because when you're talking about families and spousal communication and building a business, you have to start with a mission statement with core values and on both aspects. What are your core values for your family? If you don't have them, really stop and think what they are. I mean, you really have to be intentional on it. And most people just let things happen. And it's the same with a business. So we get on every week, every other week, we'll interview other couples, we'll interview couples who are in real estate, we'll interview friends, and we'll just talk about how they're doing with their family. It's the same thing with me and my wife. She's a life coach. She became a life coach because she saw what I was doing. She's awesome at it. She's really great. And we just share stories.
Yeah, I mean, you're the most unique cat in the industry. And I've always been really a big fan of you from a distance, so I'm glad to get you on the show. We do need to get to that other topic that we put a pin in a minute ago, and that is, I think you called it double asset. Yeah, dual asset strategies. Now, we've had great people on this podcast, including MC Laubscher, one of our biggest investors. Ah, he's that cash flow ninja guy.
Yes, very similar.
And he's awesome at this strategy, but I want to hear it from your point of view. Let's start at the beginning. If you're listening, what Gino's about to share with you is something that Melanie and I do. We do it with MC Laubscher, but we believe in this strategy. So it's called whole life insurance, and that's going to catch your attention. You'll be like, oh, I thought whole life insurance wasn't good. Well, wait until you hear how the Rockefellers use it. They use it the way Gino uses it. And when you use it as a tool for wealth building and preservation and asset protection, it's totally different than what you thought it was about on the TV shows or when someone said, let me sell you some life insurance. It's so powerful. Gino, can you tell us why you're so passionate about it and some basic ideas how to use it?
So for me, 20 years ago, some gentleman said, get whole life. So what did I know? I was in the restaurant at a few thousand bucks a year extra. I started funding a policy of $5,000 a year. 20 years later, I've got over $150,000 in cash value. It's compounding. I'm putting in five, but it's returning nine and 10. I've got a death benefit. So life insurance has a living benefit as well as a death benefit. And it's not a get rich quick scheme. So if you're here looking to make money in the next 2 to 3 years, that's not what this is. This is another tool, as Josh said, in a tool belt. It's really about long-term planning and long-term thinking. So it's really especially designed whole life insurance paying with a mutual life insurance company. That's what you want. That's what you're striving to look for. You're looking for cash value. You're looking for paid up additions on your riders because that's what you're looking for. You're looking to fund this thing and get cash value. You have access to your money day one, right? That's the thing that I love the most about it. It's about the opportunity cost. I was taught to put money in a 401k, save for your retirement. And the misnomer is you should not be saving for an event. You should be saving to buy assets. The Dave Ramsey model is saving for an event. That's great. Retirement. I've got 6 kids. You've got 10. Weddings. I was just talking to my son. My first deal that I bought with Jake in 2013, it's throwing off $2,000 a month to myself in cash flow. That very first deal. It's only a 25-unit deal. That first property is paying for my children's education, college. It already paid for my first child. It's paying for my second. So you want to be able to access your funds when you have an opportunity. You can't do that with a 401k unless you get heavily penalized. So why not look at the whole life model? You're investing in one asset, but you're really creating two because then you're borrowing money out of that asset, out of the whole life to put into your real estate deals. And the cash flow for your real estate deals will pay the loan back. At the end, when the loan is paid back, you've got the whole life asset and you've got the cash flowing real estate asset. I mean, it's an amazing strategy. I've utilized it for myself. Like I just told you, Josh, I've got my 6 kids. I've got them policies because I want them to have that long-term mindset of being able to save. And it's a forced savings. What I love about it, there's two things that I love about it. Number one, it's safe. It's secure. It's been going on for over 150 years. I need some kind of deals that are just out of sight, out of mind, that are guaranteed, right? I don't need everything in crypto. I don't need everything in real estate. This is more of a savings thing when I'm 60 or 65 or 70. That cash value is going to be really nice. It passes to your estate tax-free, the death benefit. So there's so many benefits, but it is a forced savings, long-term strategy. It makes me put money away every year. And when I have the opportunity, I can borrow against it and I can go with that opportunity that I have.
And just to add to your story, Melanie and I had a nice opportunity for liquidity at one point. And we said, well, what are we going to do with this liquidity? We bought into our own projects. We put some money off the side and then we put a large sum into this whole life. They call it overfunded.
Yes.
Where you got to work with a specialized specialist.
Yes.
Not just Jimmy down the street who started selling life insurance last weekend.
Yes.
He may not know how to do this.
Most of them don't, Josh. That's the problem. They don't understand. It's a cash management tool. If you have your money working at 0.5% in the bank, there's $17 trillion in cash accounts in the U.S. That's a lot of money making the bank rich. It's all about, you know, that where that money's flowing, let it flow back to you. All smart investors, we all control the flow of our money. It really is a mindset. So I'm hoping that my children, by the time they see that, you know, I am the beneficiary of their policies, I control their policies. When they turn a certain age, I can turn it over to them, but I can borrow the cash from their policies to continue to buy deals. And that's what I'm going to do. So think about it as a long-term cash management policy that's going to force you to save money. That's a hard thing sometimes because, like, you know, a lot of things pop up, the car, the vacation. You can put it in the policy and then borrow the money to go on the car and vacation and pay the policy back. So you have both.
And I would want to, well, let me ask, what is the person, let's talk about the values that you, the value your team is imbuing on great people. Great people reach up and want to learn from you guys because mm-hmm. they've learned that multifamily is the perennial real estate choice for long-term asset appreciation and cash flow. So they find you guys and they join you. What does that person look like? What is their typical background? Are they an executive somewhere? Are they a high paid person? Are they on their own? Are they house flipping? What does the normal person look like? And what does it cost to join one of your elite programs?
That's a great question. I mean, we just signed up two 19-year-olds. So there's a segment of the population. It's a 20K mentorship program. That's what we charge. But all the value there, these 19-year-olds quit college, they want to make it happen. So for us, it's people first, extreme ownership, unwavering ethics, right? Make it happen, and growth mindset. Anyone who joins our platform, that's what they resonate with. They hear our core values. Typically IT, engineer, a lot of doctors, but doctors get into it for a different reason because they know they can syndicate. They know that they have the capital. They can make the connection within the community. And I think people who join want to be more entrepreneurial. They see that, you know, Jake and Gino, you create multifamily entrepreneurs. You're not just buying one deal. You're buying multiple deals. You're able to scale up. Once you start looking at it as a business, that's where any real estate. I think most fix and flippers, they get burned out because they see it as a real estate thing where they're going to buy 10 houses, 12 houses, and just flip. But they don't stop to say, man, this is a really great business where I can systemize. It's the same thing in multifamily. It's just that we like the benefits. We like the tax benefits, which are great in multifamily. And I think people see that and they're like, you know what? I want to get into this business. So I would say anybody who's really high level, anybody who understands that real estate really is a multifamily entrepreneurial venture. And I think people who want to change, who are just burned out from their jobs. And that's why I got into it. I'm like, I don't like what I'm doing. There's got to be something else out there that I can start scaling up a business with.
Yep. And do you mind if I hit you with a tough question as if this was like a reporter from Wall Street Journal?
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is it's half-heartedly hard. But Wall Street Journal, at least they still do journalism. By the way, side note, they had us in their an editorial piece on December 31st, 2020. It was very nice. Actually, I have it right here in my house. And they were just doing a lighthearted piece about us as a champagne winery and all this cool stuff. Dude, I got like four fact-checking phone calls for like a few quotes. I'm like, you're the last real journalism in the world, right? I thought a tweet or something could change the entire world with no facts and not the Wall Street Journal. They actually dig in. I was freaked out. I was like, that's the fourth fact-checking call. And they're the real deal. So let me pretend I'm the Wall Street Journal. I've been really opining about this lately because I'm a huge fan of multifamily investors. Some of my best friends do what you do. Matt Faircloth, Dave Zook, all these great guys that are really great at different types of multifamily. This last year, I would have said, this is just an open question. You can take it wherever you want. A year ago, if it was, now it would be 18 months ago, before the COVID story, you and I were sitting on a panel, let's say, and they said, this guy over here is Gino, and he is famous for multifamily investing, and he's very good at it. And this guy's Josh, and he's famous for hospitality syndication and investing, and he's also good at it. Which one's more risky? It would have been hands down, hospitality has more imbued risk than multifamily. And then this year happened. And what I watched was moratoriums on mortgage, on evictions. I watched the theory of rent controls coming in outside of New York City. And I thought to myself, overlay inflation, which you and I both know is happening because we're trying to build certain things and it's like unbelievably more expensive to build. Do you think the government will eventually use this new power, this dictator power, to control rents as inflation gets too crazy? like, will you guys get pinched in multifamily? Whereas I know I doubt I will be pinched because I can change my rates every day. But what if your rents have to be $2,700 a month and they used to be $1,000? Will the government stop you?
That is a great question. I would say it's market specific right now. So if you're, this is not politics, this is policy. If you're in a bluer state, they tend to be more tenant friendly. So you're going to be there. The government's going to be able to control it. The asset class is going to make a big difference. And one of our coaches calls it the K-shaped recovery. The asset classes that are the A's and the B's, they're a little bit newer. They're not going to face that. The C minus lower denomination of asset classes that are older, more affordable housing type, you need to see that there may be risk there. You may be a value investor where you're going to go in there, say, I'm going to buy this deal. I'm going to raise the rents by $200. There may be a time in the future where the government goes, ooh, time out. You can't raise rents by that much. And that's the New York City. Your business model is that. You need to find another market, or you need to be at least aware of the market that happens. Right now in Tennessee and Florida, it's not happening yet. But just be aware of that risk. At the end of the day, food, clothing, and apartments. It is a basic human need. That's why I'm bullish on it. And you know, the demographics, as far as the millennials and baby boomers, they make up almost half the population. They're not buying homes like our generation. They're just not, for certain reasons. And that's why there's going to continue to be a demand. The government has to figure this out. They have to incentivize the C-space investors. Yeah, they can't just cap it.
I agree with you. Yeah, there's just everyone in your industry especially talks about there's a shortage, you know, which makes you more bullish, because if there's a shortage and you own the things, there's pressure on trying to get in and owning your asset. And you're right. They have to incentivize the development of new ones. Last thing on this, I wanted to, the one other question that's interesting about guys in multifamily, and it's similar in my industry. I get asked about Airbnb all the time, but Airbnb, how does it impact you? I mean, are people buying your properties? Are you ever considering buying a 20 unit and making it an Airbnb hotel instead of a rental the way you do now?
Great question. That's another one where you need to know the space. I don't think it's as scalable. Now, I don't know because I've never been in that model, but you need to know the regulations, because I live in St. Augustine. Great place. I just bought a home in a historical part of the city. I can't Airbnb. It's monthly rentals. That's all it is. So you need to be careful with the regulations, number one. Number two, you have to worry about the insurance. Will the insurance allow it? We do have short-term rentals in sort of our properties. We had a property that there's a mine next to it. So miners came. They wanted 6 months short-term rentals. We charged them an additional $300 per month for the rent. We gave them some type of furnishings and all. So there's certain areas where you can exploit that. But just be careful when you go into that model. Know the city, the community that, I mean, because down here in St. Augustine, we have a shortage. We need short-term rentals, but the hotel industry, you bad hotel guys, that lobby does not want Airbnb. They just don't, right? And then also the neighborhoods, a lot of the neighborhoods are fighting back because they don't want to see a new resident there every other day. And I can understand that quality of life issue. Just understand where you are. I don't think it's going to impact us, to be honest with you. I mean, I love going on vacation and going to an Airbnb because I have a kitchen, I've got a big family. Yeah, it's great for us.
Yeah, I'll tell you. No, it's funny. Sometimes it's a paradigm shift. And so this past year when we were selling out our hotel in advance about a year to 2 years because we don't have big enough hotels, we just made a pivot and now we're buying Airbnbs. We're buying them and that's we're operating awesome. Them professionally as extensions of our room count. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden now I'm like, if you can't beat them, join them, right? So now we just jumped right in, and I'm really excited about it, and so is our whole staff. And I could see a guy like you really crushing it, to be honest with you, at those medium-sized, smaller units in areas where it's allowed.
Where you need it also. Yeah, the other thing is maybe might be some type of universities, might be some type of employers, so that or even like a vacation, like Smoky Mountains. Smoky Mountains, the prices down there in Sevierville and Pigeon Forge, those prices have tripled and quadrupled. You buy those little cabins, they're making a fortune. I think the price point just elevated too much right now, but people saw that. A lot of smart people made a lot of money doing that.
You are a blessing to all of us, buddy. Thank you for the work you're doing. Thanks for getting so many great families involved in this type of quality real asset investing. We couldn't be more supportive. I'm sure your mentorship program could be talked about even more, because I imagine, I do probably want to ask one more question on that. I imagine part of that training you do with people and that personalized mentorship and group mentorship, does it lead toward like the deal? I mean, is there a goal that the person actually finds a deal, correct?
Yes.
And then you somehow either help them underwrite it. What are some of the magic that can happen behind the scenes in a program?
We've been
like
doing
that?
This for the last few years. I mean, our students have closed over 16,000 units. I'm trying to think of that number. Oh, it's over $1 billion in real estate closed, right? And the important thing is, you know, you can never guarantee anything, but what we do is we have the platform. We have accountability coaching. We have deal expert coaching. We have a weekly lesson. We have 7 fulfillments a year. We do boot camps, not to sell our product, but once you're in, we do fulfillments where they come, you know, a weekend, Saturday and Sunday, we call them our boot camps, or 7 of those a year. There's so much fulfillment going on that, you know what? You can bring them to water. You have to do the work. That's the bottom line. And within 12 months, you know, there's so many different levers that you can pull within the community, meeting people, getting those resources, understanding what you want. But you do need a plan. That's the most important thing. When you get in, you don't know what you don't know, right? A lot of students will get in and go, I want to buy my own deal. Then they hear about syndication. Like, you know what? I'm really good. I can raise capital. Let me look at syndication. I never even thought of that. Or creative financing. Never did a creative financing deal. Don't know what that is. We've got that toolbox. So it's just offering and teaching all the students all of these different strategies and trying to match up what their skill set is and what their abilities are. Some people have the ability to raise great capital or start out with a lot of capital. So they're at a different vantage point from others. So just being able to match up, you know, what you have to offer with what they have.
Gina, would you mind giving us the best way to reach out to you and your organization?
Sure. Just go to jakeandgina.com. We have all the podcast shows on there. We have the blogs. We have everything on there. If you want to reach out to me, my email is gino@jakeandgina.com. Just reach out to me. Give me a big, big shout out.
We love having you here. Thanks a lot for everything you're doing. Until next time, we'll see you.
Thanks, Josh.
Wow. Wow. You made it, everybody. Thank you so much. Eric and I have always said that the people who join us at the end get the pearl and the prize.
Awesome. Folks, don't forget to like and share and love what we're doing on social media. If you want to hit up Josh, you want to hit me up, those are the best places to find us. We are always camped out and ready to talk and put the fire on.
We stand by on social media. By the way, I know we're on Capital Hacking at Instagram, Capital Hacking on Facebook, and Capital Hacking on my personal favorite, LinkedIn.
Yes, because you can always find major players on LinkedIn. I know your favorite. These are some power players on LinkedIn always.
Gary Vee, he's my boy.
But Gary Vee also talks about the power of Instagram. So if you also want to find us there, we're doing a lot of really cool, sexy things on Instagram. So always you can reach out and DM us on Instagram if you have any questions or you want our time. We are always camped out and living there as well.
We will get right back to you. And just like we always say, you are now part of the team. This is a team that's here to add value to your life, and thank you for adding so much value to our life. Remember to share this podcast. Helps us grow it bigger and bigger each week, and we appreciate you posting a review on iTunes. You cannot believe how powerful that is.
Absolutely. Like and share this with anyone and everyone that you think it will add value to, and we appreciate all of that love and support. And do not forget, with great power comes great responsibility.